Guys, welcome into the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler with you here. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling right there. And he'll tell you more about that right there. And then Game Day Men's Health is right there. I'll tell you more about that later on. But the message there is pretty simple. You ain't feeling right, dragging a little bit, tired, whatever, go see him. Don't stay that way. It's pretty easy to get help. I got it. And I'm loving it. So, you know, simple, easy. That's the easiest endorsement I can tell you about. Go see them at Game Day.
I'm getting motivated, man. I'm getting motivated. Anyway.
We'll get the gym together. We'll start getting some stuff going.
All right.
What do you think? GameDayMensHealth.com, just to encode it for all the information purposes out there. All right, Bern, we got a lot to do. We're going to throw some hockey into this baby here a little bit later on. The trade deadline is tomorrow. The Blues had been on a nice little run. They had a 5-game winning streak and a loss and then a win. So, you know, good play since the break ended. And that's something that we can talk about in the not only where they are in the standings, but also what it means for the trade deadline and all of that. We'll do that in a little bit, but obviously, with spring training going on, being the home of the Cardinals, we're going to have our focus on the Cardinals here at the beginning of it. And once again, like and subscribe here on YouTube if you're watching us on YouTube. And if you're not, go to YouTube and do those things because it helps the Gas House Gang. And do the same thing for the Bernie Show on YouTube as well. And I want to start, Bernie, with a video you did yesterday because I think we've touched on it in pieces here and there. All of us have on the Gas House Gang. But you went a little deeper dive on the idea of kind of the reset versus just a rewind.
It is a rewind.
Which is kind of what we're looking at.
I mean, let me recap the essence of what we're talking about here. If you go to Roster Resource on FanGraphs and you look at the projected 26-man roster. Now, projected roster is just that. It's a projection.
Right.
It doesn't mean
it
will be the roster. But if you look at the projected roster, all 26 guys were part of the Cardinals in 2025. If you look at it from, and this is my stat, if you look at it from a offensive standpoint, 82% of the plate appearances taken last year, 82% of those plate appearances are back with the players that have returned. So all but 18% of the plate appearances last year, other than that 18%, everybody's back. They have four starting pitchers who ended the year in the rotation. Michaelis, Fetty, Palante, and who am I missing? Michaelis, Palante.
Well, Sonny Gray.
Fetty. Sonny Gray. Yeah, I'm sorry. So you have four starters who were in your rotation after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, Steven Matz, was in your rotation at the beginning of the year.
Correct.
So you have that. In other words, no room at the end for a young pitcher. Then finally, and then I'll shut up. The nine relievers who pitched the most innings for the Cardinals last year, eight of them are back, which isn't a bad thing because it was a good bullpen, minus
Andrew Pitchard. Yeah.
But, okay, how is this a reset? They're rewinding what they did last year and hoping that everyone's going to get better. That's basically what we're talking about, right?
I mean, it kind of is, and, you know, I don't know if you saw, but Matt and I talked a bit about it. I'm sorry, Tom and I. Yep, here you are, right? Tom and I talked a bit about this yesterday. Derek Gould's report that they were still kind of open to bringing in a veteran reliever. And it just gets me back to why. Like, why? I mean, you've got like eight youngish arms that you probably want to get a look at. Why are we talking about another old guy? Especially since the old guys that are out there right now are really old. Like, look, David Robertson had a nice year last year. But do you not need to see O'Brien and Roycroft and Ryan Ludos and Gordon Graceffo and Takoa Roby? And I mean, I'm leaving Kyle Leahy. There's like 7, 8, 9 guys now, not even counting what might develop as the year goes along. I'm not even talking about Andre Grenier. I'm not talking about Matt Svensson. I mean, like, you have 10, 11, 12 guys for three spots.
Right.
And how are we going to get a look at them if we're taking it? But this is kind of that point of what you're talking about. Like, where's the move forward? Like, it's not that it's not going to happen. It's just weird to me to reconcile why you're at this point with all of these arms you need to get a look at, not to mention your five rotation guys. Plus, on top of those guys, you've got McGreevy, and then you've got Matthews, and you've got Tink Hens, maybe Graceffo. But, like, so there's – where's the room to get a look at anybody at all over an extended period of time? And some of these guys, they're not babies, man. I mean, Riley O'Brien's 30. Roycroft's going on 27. You know, right. If you're not going to find out anything now, when are you ever going to find out? And then what's the point of any conversation about a reset?
100%. And I don't know why, like, what would be their motivation if you look at the free agent relief market? They're and they would need right-hander because, again, they have
They're good on left.
Plenty of lefters. There's some guys that have a name out there. I mean, David Robertson's 40 years old. I don't know what kind of money he wants. He was pretty good, I think, last year. I always pronounce his name wrong. Phil Maton. Okay, Phil Maton, who, you know, local media always says, you know, well, he grew up, in Illinois, pretty close to. He actually left his hometown a long time ago. So, anyway, is there a veteran or two if they picked one of them? No, thank you to Craig Kimbrell, by the way. But is there a veteran or two out there who could probably help you? Yeah, probably help you. But this is supposed to be the reset year that became the transition year that became the runway season. And I don't know where the runway is because there's a lot of young players being blocked. I don't know where the transition is other than in the minor leagues and player development. And I certainly don't see a reset. I see a rewind. So the Cardinals just keep trying to float one message after another, like over and over again. And it's like, they still haven't made a case of like, this is what we're doing. This is who we are. They won't do that. And you know what my concern is? Everybody's made, when the national media starts to pick on John Mozeliak, it has more impact than locals because it's easy for them to just blow off the locals. You know, that's just the way they act. I mean, I understand that. But when you got Ken Rosenthal's and other people like that, just like basically constantly jabbing them, they haven't added one player. They haven't spent a dollar on free agency. I wonder if Mozeliak wants to add a reliever just to say, like, we'll see. See, we added someone. But actually, I think that would draw more attention to the silliness of this whole offseason. Because here you are, like you said, my friend, you're so right. They have so many arms, so many guys that deserve an opportunity in that bullpen. Like, so what? Now you're going to block another dude? I mean, what, because you want to impress Ken Rosenthal, which wouldn't impress Ken Rosenthal anyway, you know, and I'm using a hypothetical there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right. We're going to get into some of the younger guys and a few other topics that tie into what we're talking about here. First for Brandon, who said, for radio listeners, said, are you just going to rerun Bernie's topics from his YouTube channel going forward? Occasionally we are, smartass, because some of us don't get to comment on those things.
Yeah. So,
find a topic intriguing, we bring it back for 5 minutes.
In other words, if I do a YouTube video, okay?
Yeah.
At that point, never should what I discussed be spoken about or written about anywhere for all time.
Or definitely not on the Gas House Gang. And certainly so that any of us could catch an intriguing topic and want to throw in our 2 cents on it at the same time.
Yeah. And another point to make here for our intelligent friend. When I do the YouTube video, that's just me talking. When I do it on Gas House Gang, you got Wheeler, or sometimes you have all four of us. And if we happen to hit on the same topic, so bleeping what? It's a group discussion. We love you too, but come on.
We love you, brother, but don't give me the shrug emoji. Give me the shrug emoji. You guys know this, man. I've been telling everybody Bernie's the same way, man. I'm okay with poking back and forth, but if you're going to punch, I'm going to punch back.
That's right.
That's just how we play.
You know what? I have this problem with my writing too, because I really don't want to like, you know, in effect, take what I put together for video and just like put it in written form and run it as a column. I try to really avoid that, but sometimes this stuff is worth talking about more than one freaking time. Okay.
Yeah, it is. And especially when it's like, again, it's one segment out of a 40 minute show. And on that note, we're changing. Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler with you here on the Gas House Gang. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Game Day Men's Health and Saliga Heating and Cooling. And Bernie, before we get into risk versus reward and guys like Victor Scott and Lucan Baker, tell us about Saliga.
Well, you can see the phone number and 314-481-7333. And of course, you go to SaligaHeatingCooling.com. We have been a Saliga family for 16 years, and we're like babies compared to the whole business. because the Dan Saliga and his family, he's the fourth owner generation and generation or operator owner, sorry, since 1927. The Saliga family's been taking care of St. Louis families. So we came late to the party here, but we're proud to be a Saliga family, and they've been taking great care of us, just like they take great care of everybody. And because it's a family-owned business since 1927, those vans with the name on the side means a lot to them. They believe it's their reputation is on the line every time they go to someone's home or business. So they do all kinds of repairs, of course, whether it be home or it be your commercial business. Take a look at the Priority Club. Go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and you'll never have to worry about their honesty, their professionalism, their reliability, all that stuff. But go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, and this independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer will take care of you, and take a look at that Priority Club when you go. Thank you very much.
All right, so we continue on with the Gas House Gang, Bernie, and building off of the conversation about why block people, I think, you know, we've been asking, I think the Cardinals have tended to chase stability and certainty over upside, and it was a sensible thing when you were openly stating that your plan was to win the division, to go make the playoffs, you know, squeeze every last game out that you can, right? I mean, like, it's an understandable thing, but this is a great time to adjust a little bit and shoot for upside. And instead of saying, okay, we know David Robertson can give us 60 quality innings, go see if Roycroft's real. Go, you know, like that kind of thing. Well, I kind of feel the same way, and I know you do, about Victor Scott as well. And Victor and Tom and I talked a bit about Victor Scott yesterday. He's been one of the better players in Jupiter so far. It shouldn't have to be too crazy of a task, I wouldn't think, for him to win the center field job. If he's hitting the ball hard, which he is, by the way, I think he's got the fourth or fifth best average exit velo of any Cardinal so far. And again, small sample size, but that's all you have in spring. And when you have a job in center field that's essentially open, that's the kind of stuff that for a guy like Victor Scott at his age and upside should be a tiebreaker, right? Like, shoot for the upside. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. If you know, if this is a reset or whatever they want to, whatever they're calling it today, Victor Scott would represent exactly what they're talking about if it was a true thing. We had a comment from someone who leaves comments at my YouTube channel who continues to try to tell me and everyone else, no, this is clearly a reset. How is it a reset? You got 82% of the plate appearances back. You've got five starting pitchers back, and you got eight of the nine relievers back. How in any sane definition is that a reset? You know, and that's the weird stuff. Some people still don't get it. Most Cardinal fans, thankfully, do. And they're just like, I don't understand this. And it's okay to say you don't understand this, right? Because this whole season's going to be kind of an adventure.
Yeah, but, interesting.
If it was a reset, we would be seeing more young players getting an opportunity. Some other young players who are already here will get more at-bats because they gave up on Walker too soon last year. And, you know, Nolan Gorman had a lot of at-bats last year, but he'll get more this year. And moving Contreras to first base opens up more at-bats for Ivan Herrera. So we're not saying that all nine lineup spots are the same, right, and every player is going to be used the same way. But it's no reset. It's a rewind with some adjustments.
Yeah, and reset.
Imagine like a film or an audio clip or a song or whatever. It's a rewind with some editing.
Yeah.
That's not a reset.
Yeah. And
somebody use that when it's editing what they already have.
The reset part is happening not in our view, right? Like the reset that's underway has been the rebuilding of the farm system and the personnel and Rob Serfolio being brought in by Heim Bloom and the different people. Like, but that's not what we're talking about. We know that's happening. We all agree that's an awesome thing. We all agree that it had to happen the way that they're doing player development. 100% that is happening, no questions asked. But it was also advertised as being a part of the big league roster look too. Right. And we know that the part of that got held up on the Arenado stuff. Totally, again, nobody's fault. I mean, you could say one guy, you know, you could blame Arenado for turning down a deal, but still, it's not his fault that he didn't want that he has an ability to exercise a no trade clause if it's a place he's not sure is going to be any better than where he is right now because he likes it here. But like, this is why I want to talk about that idea of upside. Like, to me, there's what is there left for Luke and Baker to do in the minor leagues? Like, if you're not going to give him the chance now, when are you ever going to give him the chance? When he's hitting the ball, hitting the crap out of the ball in spring, he's done nothing but mash left-handers at AAA. You need someone to mash left-handers. I know he doesn't come with defensive versatility, but you don't have to have three or four guys on the bench that have defensive versatility. It's okay to have a guy who's there to hit bombs. That's okay.
Well, that's right. And last year, the Cardinals had a bench most of the year that had pretty much left-handed hitters on it. They're overloaded with left-handed hitters anyway. They don't have enough of a right-handed influence. We're talking about impact, not just guys on on the bench. But if Luken Baker's not a kid, but Luken Baker's never had a full opportunity despite putting up massive power numbers at AAA, right? And he has shown last season, it's a small sample, but his numbers against left-handed pitching in the big leagues were spectacular. But Ollie Marmol used him more against right-handed pitchers, which I don't understand, but I think Ollie's impressed by him this spring. Yeah. I was given that message recently.
Good.
About that. Anyway, this is also why you have a thing called a DH in the National League, right? Burleson will be a DH against right-handed pitching. Gorman, I think, will be a DH against right-handed pitching. Why wouldn't you use Baker almost full-time as your DH when a lefty's on the mound for the other side? Now, yeah, you could run Ivan Herrera in there and all this stuff. There's other ways to do it.
Sure.
But that's what I don't understand about the DH. And here, you and I were texting before the show. If they're going to actually try to make Baker a meaningful factor against left-handed pitching, they're going to have to put him a lot at DH against left-handed pitching, but also to have the power bat on the bench when he doesn't start, when there's a left-handed reliever, right? You have that. You got a chance, maybe somebody tie the game or break a tie or whatever. But one thing about Ollie that I haven't liked about, one of his tactics, he did it so much with Goldie and Arenado, is that he uses the DH to sort of give them a half day off or whatever. He did it a lot. It's just like, well, I'm going to get Goldie off his feet today. We're going to put him at first base or at DH. We're going to get Arenado off his feet. We're going to put him at DH. It's not a day off. Tony La Russa told me so many times when we talked lineups over 16 years, he says, look, man, one of your players is tired, I mean, and you know when a player's tired and he knows when he's tired, even if he doesn't want to say he's tired, you can tell. He said it's just obvious. So if one of your guys needs a day off, man, you got to take care of him. You give him a day off. And like he told me about certain Cardinals back in the day, those great teams of La Russa's would come to him and he said and say, yeah, I'm tired. I could use a day off. Or La Russa would say, hey, you look tired. I think you could use a day off. And some of the players would come back with this. And this was before the DH. They come back with this. He says, well, if it's going to be a day off, yeah, I need a day off. Like, in other words, unless it's some emergency, don't put me into the game in like the fourth inning or something,
Right, right.
So La Russa's philosophy was like, look, if guy's tired, he's beat up, give him a day off, but it's got to be a real day off. So I don't want to see the situation where Ali is putting Arenado at DH or whatever. No, if he's tired, give him a day off. Let Baker hit against left-handed starters.
Yeah, let's get into this, Bernd, because I think this is a fascinating question because the same poster asked if they're the Cardinals.
Hey, Birdman, you're telling me stuff that we already know and stuff that I've written and talked about 100 times, but thank you very much.
Let's clarify this, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
His first question was, are they overly left-handed? And for people listening on the radio side, he lists 7 right-handers, 6 left-handed batters, 72% of the pitchers are right-handed.
Which is my stat, by the way. Thank you for repeating it.
But let's talk about a couple things. Number one, it depends. Are they going to choose Ciani or Scott in center field? Because if they do, that's 5 lefties in your everyday lineup.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Left-handed pitchers. We have a winner. We have a winner.
And you've got a lot of lefties who cannot hit lefties. Nootbaar's probably okay. I think Donovan's okay. But Burleson doesn't hit lefties. Gorman doesn't hit lefties. Ciani doesn't hit lefties. And Victor Scott will probably struggle with lefties, because most young lefties do. So some of this depends on what the actual lineup construction is, but it's also about facing starting pitching. So if you're going to go face a left-handed starting pitcher, You can't have all those guys in there. And if you're facing Josh Hader in the ninth inning of the game, and one of those guys who can't hit lefties is up, and you don't have a counterbalance, you don't have a Leukenbaker,
thank you,
or somebody like that, that's how you deploy those guys. So two left-handed is simply that more righties is actually on the roster is actually a better thing, because most righties don't have a terrible split against righties. Most righties are actually competitive, at least against right-handed pitching. And it's for the obvious reasons, because you see right-handed pitching so much.
During the season, and I looked at the Cardinals the last three or maybe even going back to 2021, it varies from year to year, but between 70 and 73% of their plate appearances will be taken against right-handed pitchers. So they don't have enough to counterbalance that. Like, you would like to see, when we talk about right-handed pitchers, they do have enough. I misspoke there. They do have enough against right-handed pitchers, because as you said, they have a lot of left-handed batters who are also kind of like regular players. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you can go look it up, the Cardinals were one of the poorer teams in Major League Baseball last year. At hitting left-handed pitchers. Why? Yeah. Because last year their bench didn't have much there to counteract that.
That's right.
And as Kevin Wheeler pointed out, in terms of guys who play the most, it's pretty left-handed hitting heavy. And so, with all due respect to our friend, and he's actually a really intelligent guy, but he gets hung up on some stuff. Counting raw numbers, just looking at a roster and saying, "Oh, that's a left-handed bat. That's a right-handed bat. No. You have to say who the players are. Because not all right-handed hitters are created equally, and not all left-handed hitters are created equally. You know, we're talking about impact, not just bodies. We're talking about impact.
Yeah, and the ability to maximize. And let's make the next conversation about this, because I think this is one of the core issues for the team. So it's the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler. We'll talk some Blues here in a couple minutes. But to follow up on this, Bern, it's something that I bring up a lot because it's my thing. But you agree, Tom and Matt have agreed. The ability to play matchups and maximize offensive output was not used last year. And at the beginning, we understood, right? You weren't sure what Mason Wynn was. You weren't sure if he was going to be able to play every day. You needed another shortstop. That's why Brandon Crawford was here, right? You wanted to make sure you had a lefty guy. You know, I still didn't understand the Matt Carpenter thing. I get it. They wanted leadership in the clubhouse.
He wasn't that bad. He was okay.
He was fine. It was just that they had a bench that in most situations that you need to deploy it was not helpful. And this, to me, the roster construction and the bench construction is fascinating, because I think Baker has to be there for this reason, to give you the big weapon, the big nuclear bomb in the last three innings against a lefty when a situation presents itself, to get starts. And heck, he might only get two at-bats, but if he gets two at-bats every few days against a left-handed starter, that can still be a lot more production than what you'd get from the lefties facing those guys. And what I'm really interested in, because we know, Bernie, that you're going to have two catchers. So one of the guys on the bench every day is going to most likely be a catcher. We know that if you have Leukenbaker, that's two. You're going to have an outfielder. I guess it kind of depends on whether Scott makes the team. If Scott doesn't make the team, then that's probably Ciani, which, again, is fine. If Scott makes the team, though, I'm not sure you want both of those guys. And then what do you do with the last one where you need an infielder? Do we put Sejacy into a true bench role where he's only going to start against lefties and there's not much, not much room for him to do anything else? Or do we look at a Barrero or a Hellman or somebody like that who have much more positional versatility, who can both play center field and obviously both have the ability, especially we're seeing it in the spring with Barrero, to hit the ball hard and maybe be a weapon, a situational weapon, not an impact guy, but a situational one. So when you're constructing this bench, versatility is great, but you do need the ability to use that bench to improve your offense.
No, I agree. And I am intrigued by Hellman. And I'm not, listen, man, I'm not trying to sell anybody on anything here. I'm intrigued by it, because I'd have to think that one of the reasons they got him is, no one could convince me that like any of these time, anytime the Cardinals pick up a player, even a minor deal, that Hein Bloom doesn't have some influence over that. He's really good about identifying some markers that say, well, this guy's worth a look at. And the thing about Hellman, he's a right-handed bat, number one. Number two, he can play center field. He can play any outfield position, but he can also play shortstop. And they don't want to play Donovan at shortstop unless they absolutely have to. I mean, again, if we're talking about a bench guy who can give you a right-handed bat, which they need off the, they just need in general, but also play center field, play any outfield or play any outfield position plus shortstop, the profile fits a need that they have that would be useful if he can perform at the major league level at a decent average rate.
Right.
Because it's not like their bench guys last year did anything. You know, I like Fermin tears it up at AAA and then, you know, 2 years in a row has done nothing in the major. So, yeah, they have a way to play with the roster. But, yeah, deciding on this bench is going to be interesting. And, you know, are they going to do something like keep five outfielders because of the man crush on Michael Ciani? I mean, I don't know.
Is Hellman hurt?
I don't know.
I can't find a single at-bat for him in spring training yet.
I'm looking at
their spring now. Yeah,
if he's hurt, the team hasn't said anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm looking at the I'm looking at MLB.com spring training right now, and I'm looking for, you know, I'm just scrolling through it. There you go. Yeah, he's got seven at bats.
Yeah,
so he's 0-7 so far, which again is the least of my concerns.
I know the one thing I hate about my job, and it's not many things. I love my job, but it's like if you say something, if you bring up the fact like, hey, a Hellman could, you know, in theory, because of what he can do, he might be a bench piece. Oh, Bernie's on there talking about this guy like he's Rogers Hornsby. No. Bench guys are bench guys for a reason, okay?
Yeah.
One of the things is you get the versatility of being able to play at a bunch of spots if you need a right-handed hitter. I'm just saying the profile fits.
I'm a big fan of the guy. I think he's an underrated talent. I mean,
yeah, I don't know clearly, how good the player is.
Yeah, I mean, that's but like, look, how many guys can you think of, Bernie, that can play middle infield, center field, can run, and have 20-20 seasons at the upper levels of the minors?
Right.
Like, I mean, again, he may not profile as an everyday player, but he profiles as a very versatile player with athletic skills and some power. So he would be great for what we're talking about. And I think Barrero kind of the same thing. He's a very athletic guy. He plays center field and shortstop, man. I mean, when you do those two things, you're obviously a guy that brings something. And I would just like to see a bench that is not just covering positions and not focused on defensive replacements, but a bench that's constructed so that it can augment your offense based on matchups. That would be, to me, how you can make more. If you want to win more games this year, there's a way. That's a way to try to make yourself better and more competitive than you were a year ago.
You know, the starting pitching last year was decent. I'm not saying great. It was decent. It was solid. It certainly was better than what they had in 2023. They were fine.
Yeah.
The bullpen was almost historically good by Cardinals standards. In fact, it was historically good by Cardinals standards. The defense was a plus, but they went too far with it a little bit, I think. Oh, then again, they didn't really have a lot of alternatives, especially in center field with guys getting hurt all the time.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yep.
But this is a different year. The only reason they didn't make the playoffs last year, or at least like win 89 games or 88 games is because their offense was awful.
Yep.
And really their offense has not been good for a while now. You know, it's been 10th in the National League, I think, you know, the last two seasons in runs. Yep. So 10th or 11th. So I can't believe that they would like sort of like take the risk of having this happen again, but I know what they're doing. They're betting on a lot of their young hitters are going to take a step forward, maybe even a big step forward.
Yep.
I happen to think there's some juice left in Arenado's bat.
Yeah.
Because, like I keep repeating, if you can hit 430, if you can slug 433 in Busch Stadium as he did last year, there's some juice left in the bat. How enough to make a huge difference? I don't know. But he does have it in him to have a better season in 2026, 2025, especially after all the training he did to improve his hand speed. which improves his bat speed, and his bat speed is better this spring. So you can see an upside for, like, if we went through, we're not going to do it now, we don't have time, but if we went through all these guys, we could see their upside. But you're also going to need a really high percentage of them to try to really tap into that upside.
Yep.
You know, they can't stay the same. They can't be a little bit better. They certainly can't get worse instead of getting better. So they're taking a big gamble with this thing to try to sell themselves to the public as a contender. They're going to need a lot of things to happen in the race. They're going to need a lot of things to happen. But
Let's do that breakdown tomorrow, because Matt's going to be traveling. It'll be you and me again, so we can kind of kick that stuff around. Yeah,
right.
That'll be fun.
So it's really interesting. And then, you know, maybe you or I could look at Dan Zimborski's Zips forecast for all these guys. You know, it's an intriguing team, because, you know, what does happen if a good percentage of these guys do not only do better, but do a lot better? And you and I have talked about this a lot. I ain't making any predictions on Walker and Gorman, but what I am saying, they did well, each of them, in 2023. That ain't like 9 years ago. Okay. No. That's 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like the idea of like, oh, they're awful, they're terrible, trade them while you can. No. I want to see if they can start building something, rebuilding and then building something. So this season for me is not without fascination or intrigue. I think there's a lot of interesting things about it. I'm just saying it's not the season that they told us it would be. That's all.
Good point. All right, it's the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas and Kevin Wheeler. It's brought to you by Game Day Men's Health. You can find them at gamedaymenshealth.com and Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, tell us more about Saliga.
You know, Saliga Heating and Cooling, I want to focus real quick on the Priority Club. This independent American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning dealer started this Priority Club a long time ago. We have been in it for, my guess is about 6 or 7 years, and it's been great. It's been worth every penny, and it's not like it's an expensive thing. They come to your home twice a year. They check on your heating and cooling. They adjust things just because things need to be adjusted along the way. If there's a minor problem, they solve it right away. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. It's easy. And then that minor problem doesn't become a huge expensive problem. So if you're in this Priority Club at Saliga Heating and Cooling, you know, you will have the peace of mind and knowing everything's safe and working great. It also will extend the lifetime of your equipment, and it's service you can trust. You also get priority scheduling. So there's a lot of benefits to it, and we have benefited from it. So go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com. You see the phone number there. In addition to everything else, find out more about the Priority Club, but feel free to ask them the questions. They have all the answers for you, and a deeper explanation, I should say, of what's the Priority Club is all about. Saliga Heating and Cooling. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, so we're wrapping up. We left a little time. We did a good job on our clock management today, Bernie. you and I are usually really bad. We at least left some time to talk some Blues, which is important. Look, they're on a good run. The trade deadline is tomorrow. The picture is not rosy for a wild card spot, but it's not crazy either. So if you look at it right now, the last wild card spot belongs to Calgary. They have 67 points. The Blues are two places behind that. They've got 66 points, but Calgary's got two games in hand. Vancouver at 67 points also with two games in hand. So those are the two teams you're focused on ahead of you. The teams behind you are a decent enough amount behind you where they're probably not your biggest worry. And the second wild card is basically out of play, I think. Colorado is that one at 74 points, and they're a plus 19 on the year. I think they're a different class of team. So essentially it's three teams for one spot. And what do you do tomorrow or between now and tomorrow, Byrne? Do you try to buy something? Do you listen on competitive offers? How do you manage this when you're kind of right there on that edge for the eighth spot?
Real quick, I'm going to throw this in. If you go to Money Puck, which I do, they give the Blues a 28% chance of making the playoffs. I also want to point something out, though. The Blues, from this point out, have the easiest schedule in the NHL.
Yep.
And they're trying to chase two teams. Vancouver's got the fourth toughest schedule. Calgary's got the 11th toughest schedule. So there is an opening there, right?
Yeah, there is, for sure.
There is an opening there. And the Blues have been playing great. And really, since Montgomery took over, they've been one of the best 5-on-5 teams in hockey. So what's been happening, even though they went through that awful stretch, what's been happening, the qualities that they've shown during this hot streak are real qualities because they've been there since the coaching change. So they can make the playoffs. I would still, and you know, pardon me because I'm going to do a video on this. Cause, you know, of course, we can't repeat anything in like a different place. So I would still say they're up against it. Kevin, pragmatically speaking, and that's what it is. If someone comes to you and says, we really want Braden Schenn, okay? Now, they're not going to offer a ton for Braden Schenn, which is why I don't think Doug Armstrong's going to trade the team captain, who was very popular with his teammates, and the vibe right on that team is fantastic right now. He's not going to rip the heart out of his team by trading their captain for a middling return in what would amount to as a salary dump. Because after this season, Schenn's got three more years left at $6.5 million. And those seasons will be age 34, 35, 36. And it's kind of
that.
Like,
could that be enough benefit to say, even if the return is moderate, an aging player and saving $18 million you could spend somewhere else?
That's what I was kind of referring to.
Oh, I got you.
Like, in other words, unless they get what Doug Armstrong has set a price, and I think it's high, unless they're going to get what he wants, it's much like Pavel Buchnevich last year. He didn't get what he wanted. Yeah. I don't think they're just going to turn it into a salary dump. I don't think they're going to take Doug Armstrong's personally chosen team captain, who's playing really, really well, by the way, and he's got roots in St. Louis and all that. I don't think they'd move him just for it to be a salary dump.
Good point.
Now, that's why I said, pragmatically speaking, there is some value in doing just that.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's two ways to look at things. What would I do, or what do I think is best? Oh, that's right. I'm not the one making the decision. So the man who is making the decision, how does he feel? What do we think about the way he thinks? I mean, there's two different ways to look at it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to sit here and scream, oh, if you don't trade Schenn and offload that contract, you're an idiot. You know, I'm not going to do that. Blues fans have brought up Paul Stastny. Armstrong traded him at the deadline in 2018. They were 1 point out of a playoff spot. But there was a difference. That team was 0-6-1 in its previous seven games. There's time to just say forget about it, right? And they actually sort of made a run back into contention after that.
Right,
but
right.
That team was going really bad. And Stastny, they were going to lose as a free agent anyway. So yep, I don't want to hear the Stastny comparison because it's not relevant, nor is Ryan O'Reilly relevant because that was part of an offloading that sent Tarasenko, Barbashev, Mikola, and O'Reilly. You know, that was more of a larger offload. I think he's going to hold on to Ryan O'Reilly. I don't think he's going to give up any assets for anything that would be expensive in terms of giving up assets. I think he'll just play with what he has and hope that the goaltending's great and they continue to be strong at 5-on-5 and that this really great feeling in that locker room will continue to kind of help carry that team through. And they do have the easiest schedule. So,
yeah,
that's about the best way I can put it. What do you think?
It's interesting. And we got about a minute, minute and a half left. But I think what's fascinating, here's the question I get asked a lot from Blues fans on Twitter, via text, friends of mine, people like, what's better? Is it better to get the eighth spot in the playoffs or is it better to be in the draft lottery and have a chance to maybe get lucky and you know, get a top 10 pick as opposed to going into the first round against a big team like Winnipeg or Dallas?
Yeah, good question.
And again, in hockey, though, there are upsets 8-1. It's not as crazy as it would be, say, in the NBA, where it's almost ceremonial to be in as an 8 seed.
If anything gets hot, we know what we can do.
Right. You know. But the odds of this team making a long run are probably pretty small.
I think we know that. Yeah.
So they asked me, what would you if you were hoping for an outcome? I always argue make the playoff push because you don't know you're going to win the lottery. You could end up with the 13th pick, and it doesn't really change your standing much at all. I mean, if that were more of a certainty, maybe, but it's not. You could easily be picking 13th or 14th instead of 6th or 7th. Right. And you never know. And there's value selling tickets at home, for one thing, in making the playoffs. And if you pulled off an upset, could be a leaping forward for next year, could give you something to shoot for. So I'm going to be on the side of play it out. Don't sell unless you're given a super great price. And I mean, obviously you're only going to buy if it makes sense. You're not going to buy anything that's going to hurt you in the long term, but
no, that's
I try to hold on. I would definitely try to hold on.
I'm with you. And the other thing too, Kev, is that Doug Armstrong is going to hand the general manager's job off to Alexander Steen after next season. Okay.
Right.
They haven't made the playoffs for two straight years. If they fail to miss the playoffs this year, that'll be the first time since those dark, dark times when Bill
right
Lawrie,
lockout,
when Bill Lawrie sold the franchise and stripped it down, and they had the worst record in the league, 2005, 2006, and they were really bad for 3 years. So they're at risk of sort of, even though they wouldn't be as bad a shape as they were in 2005, 2006, but they haven't missed the playoffs 3 years in a row since that period. And that was a really, really dark period for the St. Louis Blues. So I think Armstrong wants to make the playoffs this year. Ain't going to make the playoffs if you give up Shen.
Already, I want to, your reminder, like and subscribe here on the YouTube page for KMOX Sports and for the Gas House Gang. Do the same thing for the Bernie Show as well. Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate you. We got a lot more tomorrow. Looks like it'll be you and me again tomorrow, Bern. So we'll do that. Everybody have yourselves a great day, and we'll reconvene tomorrow at noon here on the Gas House Gang.
Thank you very much. Take care.